Hi, welcome to Understory, Western Australia's only environmental radio show. I'm your host, Tom Wilson. Today we hear from Russell Catermore about some ecologically destructive logging that is scheduled to take place near the town of Bridgetown in the southwest in an area of Jarrah Forest known as Warrup. Then following this interview, we end the show on a very positive note with some audio from a trip I made to the Wallery, an eco-village on the south coast near the town of Denmark. But let's jump straight into the interview with Russell Catermore. Russell represents the Bridgetown Greenbushes Friends of the Forest group. So where is Warrup anyway?
Warrup is about 20 k's southeast of Bridgetown and about 30 k's northeast of Manjum up in the greater Kingston Forest region.
I was lucky enough to actually be down there last weekend, and it's quite a beautiful forest. I drove north along a dirt track and came to the forest, had a wander through the edge of it, and there are a lot of big old mature Jarrah and Murray trees in there. Basically, what is the nature of Warrup Forest, the forest that's going to be logged? Is it old growth or new, or what's it like there?
Well, it's a Jarrah-Murray complex, and we're lucky to have it because essentially most of Compartment 6, which is the area that's going to be logged, was only logged once in the 1940s and 50s. And as a result of that comparative lack of disturbance, we've got a situation now where the Conservation Commission has officially recognised about 260 hectares of the 570 hectare coupe as being old growth. And it's in two patches, one in the north part of the compartment and one in the south.
So what does old growth mean from a conservationist's perspective?
Well, old growth really is one of the most significant forms of habitat you can have for fauna. And because of the long-standing ecological processes that have been basically undisturbed in old growth, you have tremendous variety and structure of vegetation, both from the tree point of view and also from the understory point of view, which makes for excellent habitat for nesting and other aspects that fauna require, particularly dispersal and foraging.
And it actually looks quite different, doesn't it, to forest that's been logged, say, 50 years ago?
It does. Certainly, you can identify the very tall canopies, the thicker canopy that exists in old growth, and also the size of the trees. A lot of those trees in Warrup would be in the range of 300 to 500 years. We know now from dendrochronological studies of Jarrah trees that those trees in Warrup would almost certainly be of that age order. And what's significant also about Warrup, of course, is that while it was cut once, you've still got in that forest the structure of the original old-growth Murray, which, of course, wasn't taken out by the loggers in those days. They just concentrated on the very best Jarrah. So
there's some huge Murrays in there.
Oh, yes.
Real giants of the forest.
Yeah. And, of course, the Murray now is known from scientific research to be a very, very significant component of the ecosystem, particularly the fact that we now know that, in all likelihood, as Jarrah and Murray get older, it's the Murray which, when they're older, form deeper hollows than Jarrah, and therefore are particularly important for species dependent on hollows for nesting.
So what is the Bridgetown Greenbushes Friends of the Forest Association worried about when it comes to Warrup? What's going on down in Warrup?
Well, what's going on is that there is a proposal for intensive logging of the areas all around the existing old growth areas that have been set aside. They can't log the old growth. That's been determined a long time ago. But the issue now is that the high conservation value forest which surrounds the old growth is what is under threat. And it's under threat because the nature of the intensive logging is essentially cutting the surrounding trees and vegetation back to either a form which is known as gap or shelterwood. And both of those forms of cutting, in fact, effectively clear felling. They're required to leave some trees for habitat purposes, but essentially under the system that exists for logging in state forest, and one needs to remember that this obviously is a part of the state forest, under that system you're allowed to take out a certain quantity of first and second grade jarrah material, but also for each cubic metre of that material you take out, you're also allowed to take out between 5 and 6 cubic metres of other non-first and second grade jarrah and also other marry-type material. So the real damage that we fear is going to be done to Warrup is the effective clear felling right around the old growth, which is going to affect the integrity, the ecological integrity in the long term of the old growth itself. The Greater Kingston Forest Region is fauna rich and has a lot of rare and threatened fauna that aren't found anywhere else, particularly in a concentrated area. And Warrup is part of this region, and this area shares with Dryandra and Perup as being one of the three most important refuges for rare and threatened fauna in the southwest.
Right, so you're wondering why we're destroying the habitat in this area?
Well, one does wonder about this because all ecological knowledge that we have now suggests that it's so important to keep habitat intact. And what is going to happen in Warrup is that the habitat will be fragmented, it will be juvenilised, and also, of course, the structure of the forest is going to change. And with the best will in the world, loggers still don't know what the impact, the long-term impact on fauna will be of the types of forest that they are now producing as a result of intensive logging. There is no scientific evidence to predict that. And that's another one of our great concerns.
So this sounds like one of the big environmental crimes that's happening right now in WA.
Well, a crime is one way of putting it, but we regard it as a severe and gross environmental injustice.
And so when is this going to happen?
Well, it's scheduled for this year, and planning on the part of the FPC is at a very advanced stage. We have made many, many representations to many different government bodies and also members of parliament and also the Premier and the Minister for Environment over these matters. However, it appears at this stage that this logging will take place, and the community in Bridgetown, which has greatly valued this area over quite a number of years, certainly the interest of Bridgetown people in this area was very strong, at least as early as the 1980s. And of course, their representations helped set aside a large part of the area around the Warrup region as part of the Greater Kingston National Park.
You brought in a map earlier today, which I had a quick look at, of the Warrup block. And the area of old growth is not in clear rectangular blocks, so that when they log in the coop, they'll have large contiguous areas of forest. They're going to have kind of scattered, strange-shaped bits of forest with lots of edges exposed, aren't they, to wind and heat and weeds. Is this one of the major problems?
It is. It's the what's known technically as edge effects that can be extremely adverse. The fact that the two areas of old growth don't have good perimeter to area ratios, in other words, the, as you pointed out, the boundaries are not in the shape of a square, they're quite irregular. This really does mean that any logging right up to the boundary, which will take place, is going to open up the old growth stands to all sorts of effects. And of course, the influence of climate change as it's developing in this part of the southwest is going to provide even more problems for a place like Warrup, because one has to remember that Warrup has had a declining rainfall along with all parts of the southwest, as we now know. And a few years ago, it was running, its annual rainfall was about 850. And that's listed in all the scientific literature. We now know from the BOMA evidence, the Bureau of Meteorology evidence of rainfall patterns that have changed in the southwest, that Warrup is probably now getting at the most about 720 mils of rain per year.
That's a big reduction.
It is, but there's more, or less in a way. If you look at local records and compare them to what's going on in Warrup, I can vouch for the fact that not far away from Warrup in the southeast, in the same Isahyatt band, the rainfall figures since 1991 have only been about 680 mil per annum. So we're looking here at a situation where Warrup, Compartment 6, which is under threat, is going to have its very significant hydrological values affected, as well as the integrity of the old growth.
Right, and so who do we have to blame for this idea of logging right up to the edge of the old growth stands in the Warrup Block?
It comes about from an historical circumstance where the history of forestry in Western Australia has developed on a demarcation basis. And effectively, state forest is available for logging unless it has particular attributes such as streams, where stream reserves are set aside, and other sorts of areas are protected as ecotype zones and so on. But unfortunately, the public only have probably one main opportunity in order to have an input into this entire process, and that occurs when a forest management plan is set up. And this one was set up in 2004. And many of the public submissions that were made at that time were extremely strong in putting forward arguments that there should be full recognition of the environmental needs of the forest. And in fact, the FMP was supposed to uphold that, the basic principles of protecting biodiversity, of ecological integrity, and applying the precautionary principle. Now, what we're seeing in Warrup is an unfortunate circumstance where government and forest agencies are able to log, and yet all of what we believe is the ecological evidence is that if they do log up to the boundaries of this old growth compartment, the old growth in the compartment, then those edge effects that we spoke of before are likely to occur, and we have no guarantee at all that the areas of stream reserves that they've set aside will at all be adequate as climate change continues to bite. Warrup's actually right on a catchment divide, and part of it goes to the west out to the Wilgarup River, and the other part that's within Compartment 6 all feeds down into the Yarraminna. And we know from what scientific work has been done in places like British Columbia and North America that now forest planners are very, very cautious when they intend to go and log in areas of hydrological significance like this. However, the only research that's been done in relation that can be used for Warrup goes back to the 1980s. So we're in a situation here where there's an enormous amount more of scientific information that we believe needs to be brought forward and examined in order to justify what they're trying to do. We believe that if this goes ahead, it's an environmental injustice. And the amount of timber that will be taken out of this, if you compare it to the long-term value of what the community will lose as a result of it, there's just no comparison.
Right. So what would you recommend members of the public who care about Warrup do?
Well, the BGFF website is available for them to examine, where there's a lot of information about Warrup and what BGFF is attempting to do. If members of the public would...
Sorry, just before we go any further, Russell, can you tell us what that website address is?
Yes, www.bgff.org.au.
So one more time. And there's also a Facebook page, I believe.
I believe there is, yes.
So that's for the younger generation.
Yes.
Okay, well, thanks very much for talking with us. That was Russell Catermore from the Bridgetown Greenbushes Friends of the Forest Association. Moving on, we go much further south to the south coast and to an intentional community known as the Wallery. I walked around the Wallery quite recently, and the tour guide I had for this trip was Wallery resident and Cade gardener Louise Duxbury. This place began life as a paddock in the 1970s, but as you're going to hear on the following recording, it's come a long way from then. Listen to all the birds in the background.
This is just a picture of the Wallery Road and our house in the paddock in 1985. So it's just worthwhile seeing the change over time. It was an old dairy farm, no trees or anything, no gardens, no houses on the property, and this is 30 years later. So
it's basically cleared land.
It was cleared land. This is paddock.
This is when we first came down. This photo is taken from up the paddock looking down. And we have taken heaps of trees out from around our property here as they grew up and kind of became a problem and then became a bigger problem. And, you know, we had trees. Well, you wouldn't see the sky anywhere around from unless you went right out because the trees were 30 metres. So we've had to take all these trees that were planted desperately. So it does change incredibly over that 25 years.
And this is the orchard that you can see straight out there.
So there were some fruit trees.
No, we put them in.
That's when you're planting it.
Yeah, that's
right.
Us planting it. Yeah.
God, they've grown, haven't they? They're doing well.
Oh, so well, they've been like this for 30 years.
Just have a look, and then let's go out, and I'll just show you the orchard and particularly the vegetable garden, so we can have a. So this is the orchard that you could see in that picture where there was nothing. Simon's just done this whole huge job because, as we have planted things in this area, local native bushes and everything, all of the plant animals have come back. It's been one of the most fantastic things about change over time is how you recreate landscapes. So when we were first here, the only things that had been planted was a few Eastern States eucalypts, and they were inappropriate species for here, and which is why Simon said we've pulled them out when they got too tall and burnt them as our fuel. When we were first here, the only birds that we would see were the big birds, crows, magpies, kookaburras. As the plants that you can see when you just turn around, all of the native things close to the house and over here to the west, as they grew, the small birds came. And we would see new species come constantly. So we would see New Holland honey eaters, and we've got the splendid wrens, the red fairy wrens. We have sometimes a golden whistler. We've got the willy wagtails, firetail finches, western rosellas, Port Lincoln ringnecks, red cap parrots, which devastate our fruit and particularly the citrus. What's happened is you provide habitat and the native animals come back. We don't have any cats and dogs on the community, and that has been a really, really important part of the rehabilitation of this as a living landscape.
How do you keep the ferals out, is it?
We bait.
Oh, you do.
Regularly. Mm. We trap, we bait.
I understand why you don't have cats, because they eat birds, but what do the dogs do?
Chase the kangaroos.
Yeah.
Eat things like goannas, snakes.
Right.
So some of the other things that we've got here are skinks, lizards about that big. That's a bobtail. Bobtail lizard.
Ex-bobtail.
Yeah.
Eaten
we
by
also
something.
Get, king skinks, which are about that big. They're fantastic. The other animals that we've now had coming are the little marsupials, and dogs would devastate those. Bandicoots we see occasionally, and there's diggings everywhere. The other day, Simon and I were eating lunch just out there, no morning tea, and we had honey possums, tiny little honey possums in the banksia right there next to the house, and there were about four of them. Honey possums and pygmy possums right here, right on the house. So, you know, you just know that you're creating a good environment.
So
this is a pretty big garden for a one, you know, for a small household. You don't need anywhere like this size.
You like it?
I'm a passionate gardener, and it's one of the reasons why woofers for me are essential. is because they help to keep it maintained, but also they eat the produce. And for me, part of my passion is to share knowledge about gardening. So for me, woofing is perfect. People come, they woof, they make it keep going. I talk to them about gardening passionately and they go away and hopefully garden. So at the moment it's in transition, that's why it looks a bit messy. I'd hope to spend a couple of half days and whip it into shape. It always looks a bit tatty at this time of the year. But very shortly I'll be pulling out most of this stuff, which is the summer crop. So in summer, this is the summer, is at the end of that is when you store things. In America they call it putting away, and that's exactly what you do. You make zucchini pickles, tomato sauce.
It was rotting, so I assumed.
Oh yeah, it is. Oh, it's, it's on.
Not quite rotting, but.
Oh, no, no, it's not.
Definitely available to eat.
Yeah, how hot is it?
Is it meant to be a chili?
It is.
You haven't hit the seeds yet, though.
That's why I'm looking at you.
He's getting gross.
It's not hot. I thought it was a small capsicum.
Okay,
you haven't hit the seeds yet.
I'll just tell you what else is in here.
Just keep going.
I pretty much know.
Right. Waiting for me to turn
all
red.
All my own potatoes, pumpkins, garlic, onions for all year. I've got sweet potatoes, which are a seasonal thing. Same with basil, I've made pesto to last further. Zucchinis for in pickles. Tomato sauce will last me for a few months. The beans I have all year, so that's the trellises over there and at the end there. That sort of trellis works like a treat. If you can get old Rio reinforcement steel, brilliant in gardens, really brilliant. I grow enough carrots and broccoli and lettuces for our own consumption. So pretty much all year we will grow probably 90% out of the garden.
Wow, so peak oil's not going to hurt you.
Not food wise, but it's amazing when you go through the things that you buy from elsewhere. You know, so where do you get your other staple carbohydrates? Potatoes is one of the fantastic things, because you can grow potatoes in Australia and that's a key carbohydrate.
But if you were forced to live on your own garden for a year, you wouldn't be malnourished.
No.
Yeah. Definitely not.
Do you know one of the reasons why, though? Our soils are really lacking in micronutrients. So what I do is get seaweed because it's got trace elements to it. So I've got a big pile of seaweed there. What you can see out the side, out the end, is three big compost bins. So I'm constantly making huge amounts of compost, and I put in seaweed, horse manure, chicken manure, all the weeds from the garden, a little bit of lime, and that becomes the sort of the basis for the garden. I've got a big asparagus patch, so that comes up in springtime. Yeah, you're always looking for what you can put in that is seasonal.
So I'm assuming this is all organic?
Totally.
Yeah.
Yep, I've never used sprays and I don't use any insecticides, even for organic sprays. Yep. I just put up with a bit of seed, you know, a bit of attack, insect attack. I've never really had a problem. If I've had once, yeah, that's the sweet potato. Once I had snails, and I've got a few again now, I'll bring in ducks.
Yeah,
they
eat them all out, and then for years I had no snails.
So you're woofing here?
Yeah.
Cool. Who are you woofing with? Yeah. Or everybody?
Sorry?
Who are you woofing with? Louise?
Just, Louise and Sandy.
Right.
Only here in the house.
Oh, cool.
For them. Yeah.
How are you finding it?
Sorry?
How do you find it being at the Wallery?
They were in the woof guides.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
There's a guide in which you can.
The woofing guide for Australia.
Yeah. Actually, when you become a member, you just, you know, I don't remember how much is there, but you just have to buy this guide in which you have all the places, address, description, blah, blah, blah. And then, yeah, I just contacted them. I was interested in this community.
The idea of an eco village.
Yeah.
Yeah. And how long have you been here?
Oh, a few days. 3 days.
What's your impression of the place?
Very good impression.
Very good impression, yeah.
Yes.
People seem happy here.
Yeah, they are. Very, there's, yeah, solidarity, they share the same values, you know, so, yeah.
How long have you been here?
24 years.
24 years, wow.
Yeah.
So you must feel quite proud to see all the orchard growing and the community flourishing. Is it nice to show people from outside the Wallery how things are going here?
Yeah, but it doesn't feel like proud of it. It's more, I'm really happy to be living in here, and how come other people haven't got that same opportunity? So I'm wanting to share it in order to say, you can have this too, we can have this on a suburban street. You mightn't have the same extent of land, but you can have the community, you can grow beautiful food, you can live with much, much less on your street. Doesn't matter where the street is. So that's what I get excited about.
And what drew you to the Wallery in the first place?
I'd been involved in activism and non-violence, Gandhian non-violence training, and was a trainer myself. And post the Franklin River blockade, which I was an active participant in, I was looking for community. I'd experienced community. I knew that that's what the world needed, was people who came together to live intentionally in a peaceful, harmonious way with less impact on the world.
I think a lot of people are sceptical that intentional communities can work because they think inevitably some kind of strange eccentric personality might cause a problem in the community and things will break down. Have you ever had any problems with community here?
Yeah, of course. In the same way as people have problems with relationships. Have you ever had a relationship that's gone a little bit odd and been a bit difficult?
Never.
Never.
I'm perfect.
You lie. So the community is a microcosm of our society. And what you do is, by being on an intentional community, you agree to put in the effort to make it come to rights. And sometimes that's quite difficult. But it's I think we're doing quite well in recognising that's part of life and that's the skills we need.
Thanks for listening to Understory, and see you next week for another show, 11:30 a.m. on RTR 92.1 FM.